So, David, at the end of last month, we had a big moment in the annual budget process with the Biden administration releasing its full budget proposal for fiscal year 2022, which starts on October 1st of this year. Can you just give us a quick summary, sort of the highlights of the president's budget and how it compared, some of the things that were surprised you when you compared it to the skinny budget that the administration released earlier this year?
Well, I think the reality is that it put meat on the bones, and it was clear that that the president and this administration do look at healthcare as an extremely important part of their agenda, and they look at the money being there speaking louder than words. In other words, making sure things are as funded as they can be, and they also make it very clear that along with that funding comes an expectation that the agencies that are involved with dispersing that money will be looking very, very closely at whether or not the services they provide are really equitable and available to everyone, and not just sometimes, as we see in healthcare, reinforcing disparities that occur in other areas. So that is, I think, probably the big picture of it all. And it comes along with also his team being confirmed into place at HHS. So we really have all the players, and we are off and running to really kind of see what we can do within with an administration that really wants to see the Affordable Care Act firmly entrenched and working properly, and that we are also providing a significant amount of money. You know, as we've talked about, they have put down the marker on ARPA-H, which is putting healthcare money out there to really allow some really very creative research and letting them try to go after things.
Yeah, so you mentioned, so it's interesting what you're saying. So the, you know, President Biden has his team in place at HHS. As we've talked about before, most of the key players were very involved in the development and sort of rolling out of the Affordable Care Act. So there's really an effort to shore up all aspects of that legislation. A second point you've made is everything that's happening related to the different healthcare agencies, but particularly the research enterprise within the Department of Health and Human Services. And we can in the future sort of do a deeper dive on ARPA-H and how it's similar and different to, say, DARPA and some of these other sort of innovations. But kind of within that context, what's the status of the president and the administration's support for KidneyX?
Well, it seems as though the administration intends to be supportive of a lot of the kidney initiatives overall. So that is a very positive message for what we're looking at. But KidneyX in particular, we always talk, you know, our listeners here as nephrologists always talk about how important the transitions of care are with kidney patients. And that's when, you know, a patient really is exposed to the most vulnerable, and difficult parts of their healthcare process. So that's a similar, you know, kind of analogy for KidneyX, whereas it just went through the last couple of years with the administration that helped. And now that the new administration's come in, the budget includes another appropriation for KidneyX. Basically, it's sending the signal KidneyX is well, it's alive and well, and that they do not intend to turn their back on that commitment, and they are going to continue with it. And as you and I talked about, we actually received a letter back from Dr. Rachel Levine, the Assistant Secretary for Health, who will be in charge of overseeing HHS's work on KidneyX. And in the letter that we received, which is in response to a letter of congratulations by ASN, Dr. Levine actually points out that in her field, in her area, they will be overseeing KidneyX, and they are looking forward to working with ASN and all the parties in the community on KidneyX and advancing all of that innovation and research there.
So as I think about it, as I step back and just, you know, this, and I think about it, this journey that started with the White House Organ Summit in June of 2016, which was held by the Obama administration when the current president was the vice president. And that started a discussion around the need for more kidney transplantation and other issues related to ways to improve kidney health. It continued through the Trump administration with the executive order and a series of policies that were supported both in a bipartisan way, but also between the White House and both chambers of Congress, and how that's continued into the Biden administration and sort of the momentum that started, if it's the final rule around the OPOs, if it's the CMMI demonstration projects and some of the work that they're doing in terms of care delivery, if it's the continued support from a funding perspective, but also from an administrative and sort of focus perspective with KidneyX as an innovation accelerator, if it's the funding related to the research enterprise, either generally for the National Institutes of Health, and we don't talk as much as about, say, PCORI or ARC or the VA, but all the other sort of research enterprises within the U.S. government, but then also more specifically for the National Institutes of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, as well as now this opportunity perhaps to really have a part of ARPA-H focus on innovation related to kidney diseases and the delivery of care. There's just a lot happening, and my sense is there's some momentum here that if we can continue to support, and I completely glossed over the Immunosuppressive Drug Coverage Act, which of course is now law. And so just help us out. Is there anything I missed, or how do we connect these dots?
You know, you connect the dots by staying in the game. And as you move along, you know, you get to pick up a thread and bring it along with you. And that's how you contribute to bringing them along in the policy conversations. We are asking for meetings with the new head of CMS, the administrator of CMS, from the new secretary of HHS, and also with, as I said, Dr. Levine. So that's really kind of how we plan to do that. We plan to, and others in the community do that as well. We plan to go back with our agenda and say, we want to check in with you to make sure that commitment is firm, and we're seeing all the signs that it is firm and where we want to work going forward. So you mentioned the OPO metrics rule. So that leads us to then we need to go to work on the transplant center criteria and transplant center metrics. So those are issues that need to be picked up and worked on. KidneyX continue to be worked on, making sure that we just have equitable access for people, you know, to get healthcare in many different ways, and also that we have a strong workforce that is able to handle the needs of these of our American citizens and their need, their healthcare, and that we have the healthcare workforce to handle all of these issues. And Todd, you know, we've talked about this very much, and I know you worked a great deal with our past president, Dr. Agarwal, last year on this issue as well. Nephrology is a very specific practice, is a specialty with some of the highest levels of international medical school graduates working in the field. 49% of all practicing nephrologists in the United States are international medical school graduates. And that means that we are really very much an international workforce. But the system in the United States can be a little strange in terms of how many visas it gives out to come into the country to do this work, and whether or not those visas get captured or recaptured, so to speak, when they are not being used, and whether or not you add that to a limit on the amount of how many people can come from a particular country, what we call country caps. So you're looking at a piece of legislation that's intended to recapture 25,000 immigrant visas for nurses and 15,000 immigrant visas for physicians. And so this would be a really important opportunity to really kind of boost that part of the healthcare workforce and make sure that we are allowing ourselves to be able to bring in the best and the brightest to work and to provide healthcare in the United States.
I'm just sort of curious, is the legislation introduced in both the House and Senate? Does it have both Democrats and Republicans supporting it? What do you think its chances are in this Congress?
It's a good one. So, for example, in the Senate, you have one of the top Democrats, Dick Durbin from Illinois. And then you have, on the Republican side, John Cornyn from Texas. He's number two ranking in the Republican caucus in the Senate. So that's a pretty impressive, mix. You've also got, in the Senate, Patrick Leahy, Todd Young from Indiana. You've got Chris Coons from Delaware, Susan Collins from Maine. Patrick Leahy, by the way, from Vermont. I didn't say that. But, that's a really good mix. So it's a very strong bill. And then over in the House, similarly, it's got a very strong mix as well of House Republicans and House Democrats. So these bills, have a real chance of passing. And I think we're going to work hard on making sure that happens. I'm going to ask our listeners to like chime in and try to get their members of Congress to support it as well. But these are good bills. These are good bills with good purpose. They're clean. They have a very, they have a very defined objective, and they have very defined mechanisms for reaching that objective. And I think that's what really has garnered so much bipartisan support.
So before we move to the sort of final issue, I just want you to help us understand. So the term a clean bill, what does that mean exactly?
Well, it basically means that this bill is designed to address something very specific. It addresses the visas that are available for international medical school graduates who are graduating from a medical school outside the United States. It is not trying to create new visas. It is using ones that have been not claimed in the system. And then it is not trying to expand any other authority. It does not get into citizenship questions. This is solely for visas. So that's what I mean by it's a very clean bill. It addresses very specifically exactly what it's supposed to. And it doesn't, it's not one that you would imagine attaching other things to. You know, we've talked about before, we have a favorite term in Washington, which is a Christmas tree bill, something that has to get moving. And so therefore everyone attaches something to it. So that will be their one chance during that session. This is a bill you could see being passed in a straight up clean vote, probably in a consensus, on a consensus calendar. And a consensus calendar is one to which, the bill can be pulled up and passed, as long as there are no objections by anyone from the floor.
So the final issue that I wanted to address is ASN has also recently endorsed the Equality Act. What's the Equality Act trying to accomplish?
The Equality Act has been long sought after in different forms for many, many years. And this is June. June is Gay Pride Month. And basically what the Equality Act does is it goes back to the Civil Rights Act. And it includes in the original includes in law that people's sexual orientation and gender identification cannot be a purpose for both unemployment practices, but also any type of discrimination, housing, anything of that nature. And it's also very important because we really are talking about, particularly in the transgender community, a lot of work that needs to be done to make sure these individuals really get full access to healthcare, that insurers are not blocking them, that they're not being blocked by various groups that say, for whatever reasons they want to claim that they don't believe in gender issues and gender identification issues, that they will be protected. They have some protection right now. Under, some of the various ways in which we interpret various rulings from the court. So right now, the Biden administration is basically telling them to administer what we call the Bostic the Bostic ruling that came out of the Supreme Court that basically had to do with gender identification and employment discrimination. But the catch is, It doesn't apply across the board outside of those particular sections of those parts of discrimination, and another administration can come in and undo that and make a change and say we're not going to look at it that way. We're not going to force it. This would go back and actually make it very clear that particularly people both by their sexual orientation and by their gender status and gender identification, particularly transgender individuals, that they could not be discriminated against in any shape, form, or fashion.
So if the same questions I did for the Healthcare Workforce Resilience Act. So the Equality Act, does it have bicameral, bipartisan support? What do you think its chances are in terms of passing in this Congress?
Well, it has bicameral support. It has already passed the House of Representatives. There were a handful of Republican votes in the House for it. Not tremendously large number, but there were. But in the Senate, it has not been taken up for a vote. There are no Republican co-sponsors in the Senate, and I think it will be a difficult road to hoe in the Senate, unfortunately. How that's going to play out, I don't know. We've been around the block on this issue many, many, many times, and really most of the protections, most of the protections for gays and lesbians and bisexual and transgender people have really comes about through court actions. And we are very happy with those wins, and we're not complaining about that, but it would be nice to see some of these things become statutory and become immutable without an act of Congress to overturn them.
Well, David, thanks. You gave us a lot to think about, and you know what I'm sensing as I'm listening to you is mostly optimism, but some frustration around, you know, some of the inability to move, you know, a number of pieces of legislation forward, particularly the Equality Act that you obviously feel very strongly about.
I do. But yeah, I'm actually feeling more optimistic these days than I would have expected. But we'll all kind of hold on to our umbrella at the same time.